Let's start. So we start with a summary of what we saw yesterday. What we saw yesterday is that by combining the power method, which basically consists in taking the Hamiltonian and or powers of the Hamiltonian and applying them to some initial state, we saw that we could get to the ground state and to its energy, or at least we were converging to its energy. I'm saying combining the power method plus locality, meaning that the Hamiltonian is a sum of local terms, right? We managed to get ground states with a cost that was scaling. So the cost was order 2 to the n, as I pointed out by one of you. There was a factor n in front, which we don't pay too much attention to, but is there. And so this is what we saw yesterday. And Dennis, I'm going to explain something that is related to the homework today. By the way, did you manage to put the file on the wiki? Okay. So Dennis will describe the homework to you. Okay. So I will not explain this in detail, but I'm going to say something that is relevant to the homework. So let me introduce a translation operator. P, defined by its action on a basis, which basically in the diagrammatical notation that we had, that we use, is if this is the wave function, then T, what T is doing is taking the first index to the last position, second to the first one. Okay, so this thing here is T. Okay, we translate we can think of this as having the n sides with periodic boundary conditions, and we just rotate or advance one position. Okay, so as part of the homework, then we'll have, you'll be asked to take the Hamiltonian for the Ising model. With periodic boundary conditions. So in this case, the Hamiltonian will commute with a translation operator. Okay. And when this happens, then you can always find an eigenbasis of H, which is made of states that are invariant under translations. And the homework will ask you to find, for each possible momentum, to find the lowest energy state. So what I'm saying here is that if we plot the energies, the eigenvalues of H as a function of K, and K will be, I'll define K in a second, so K will be related to the eigenvalue by T in the following sense, in the following way. So we're saying that we can find an eigenbasis of the Hamiltonian such that it's also an eigenbasis of T. And then I define K. Okay, you can show that this Hamiltonian has this operator has eigenvalues which are phases. Okay, and K is going to be the momentum of a given state, and it appears here in the face. Okay, so then we can choose n, the number of sides to be odd. Okay, and if we choose n, the number of sides to be odd, then we have that k can run from this number to this number, and then for each value of k, you'll find, say, yeah, for each value of k, we will find many different possible energies. Okay? And what we want to do as part of the homework, the goal of the homework is to be able to use the power method to get, for each value of k, the lowest possible energy. Okay? So that's the goal of the homework. Not just getting the ground state, but actually the lowest energy state in each given momentum. So Dennis will give you more details on what you have to do, but this is the main goal. And then what I want to tell you, if I find a proper place, is how we do, I think, is it okay if I write there? Should be fine. Okay. So if I give you some state, how do we project, or how do we take this state to have, how do we transform this state into another state that has well-defined momentum? Okay? And it's very simple. Given a state, we just take the state, we apply the translation operator to it, and we put here some phase. We take a linear combination of the state with the translation with the proper phase, and we do this a number of times with now 2k and then t square applied to psi, etc. So we write a linear combination from, let's say, small n equal, small n from 0 to n minus 1 of a phase, which is going to be k times n, and then t to the n applied to psi. Okay? You can convince yourself that if we now, this is this linear combination, and now we're going to call this psi k. This resulting state has well-defined momentum, and it's k. And we can test that if we apply t to psi k, okay, then that's, we just take this expression, and now we, instead of n, we have n plus 1 here, because we're applying t once more. Okay, and this very much looks like the original expression, except that we have this n plus 1 here, but there is a sum for all possible n's. So this, we can just define n prime equal to n plus 1, just as a way of a change of variables here. And then this will look like n prime from 0 to n minus 1 e to the minus I 2 pi over n of k n, what do I want to do, n minus 1. Now we are, or I call it n prime. And now you can see that we have exactly what we want, except for a phase that we can take out. So if I take this minus 1 here, I write it explicitly, then we get e to the I 2 pi over n k, and then psi k, okay, as we wanted to show. Yes, yes, it could be from 1 to n, okay, but then if you look at this phase here, and the fact that t, you're right, but I should have said t to the n, right, if you apply this translation n times, position 1 goes to position n minus 1 all the way back to position 1, so that's the identity. And then on the other hand, exponential of minus I 2 pi over n k times n, right? It's this n goes with this one, and you are left with 1. So using that, we get this. Okay? So what I'm saying is that if you want to guarantee that your vector has a well-defined momentum in the homework, then what you can do is you can keep symmetrizing it this way. Okay? So when you apply the power method is directing you to the absolute ground state of the Hamiltonian. The power method is probably trying to get you here. But if you keep symmetrizing, you'll, for instance, with this momentum, then you have two effects. One is power method is trying to get you to the lowest energy, but when you symmetrize, you go back to this column here, okay? And by combining the two effects, you can end up in the lowest energy state for a given moment. Okay, I think that's a sufficiently clear hint, and then when you get the homework, you'll see what else needs to be done. All right, so today I want to talk about free fermions. So far we've seen that we can deal for a generic Hamiltonian, local Hamiltonian, we managed to get, even with small resource, with just a laptop, we can get to say 20 spins. If you push it, you can get maybe to 30 spins with even with your laptop. But now we want to go really, we want to be able to analyze systems that are, I don't know, 10,000 spins or, you know, not spins but sites. So much larger. So how can we do that? Well, we'll resort to the free fermion formalism. And of course, we're specializing. This is no longer a generic approach. We can only deal with free fermions. So that's a limitation. But then let's accept this limitation and use free fermions to explore larger systems. And Dennis gave the first day, gave lecture number 4. So the good news is that today is day 5, and we are with lecture 5. It's the first time we can synchronize that. And what I've done here is I've summarized what Dennis told you on Monday. So if we have n fermionic modes, what we have is a set of n annihilation operators that fulfill these anti-commutation relations. Okay, you saw that we can define the number operator for each mode, and then the total number as the sum of the number operators for all the modes. And then what Dennis told you is that if we have H Hamiltonian, which is quadratic, and commutes with the particle number, the total particle number, then H can be written in this form. Okay? So H, we said we wanted it to be quadratic, and on top of that, preserve particle number. So these are the only allowed terms. So, and then A, capital A, is a matrix of coefficients that fulfills. So if you want H to be Hermitian, then you see that A itself has to be a matrix. So this A is an n times n matrix. It's n times n, okay? That has to be also Hermitian, right? So you learned that on Monday, that for as far as Hamiltonians are concerned, and then we are gonna consider Gaussian states. These are states that fulfill, that obey, that are completely characterized by a correlation matrix, so they obey Wick's theorem, Wick's theorem allows you to express the rest of higher power correlations in terms of those. And then if we also enforce that this state commutes with a particle number, that if we also assume that there is particle number conservation, then Dennis told you that the whole wave function or density matrix, which would be in general a 2 to the n times 2 to the n object, can be completely characterized with a correlation matrix, which is again n times n. Okay, we go from n from 2 to the n times 2 to the n to n times n. So this is a very radical reduction. These matrices, if we build a Hamiltonian or the density matrix, they are that big. We replace H simply with A and rho simply with, what do they call it? M, right? Which are N times N matrices, okay? And that's the key to being able to explore larger systems. All right, and what else did we learn? Well, specifically, so yeah, so this correlation matrix, again, as in the case of the Hamiltonian, this correlation matrix is Hermitian. And finally, if A characterizes the Hamiltonian and U, and maybe I should make this more explicit, U here belongs to unitaries, n times n unitaries. So if U diagonalizes A, then we can get, right? So if U diagonalizes the Hamiltonian, so to say, as expressed by A, then just having U, we can also build the correlation matrix for the ground state by just taking the same unitary transformation, the same diagonal form, but we replace the energies that we find here with just their signs. So these are plus or minus ones, okay? So this is how easy it is to find the ground state within the free fermion formalism. You first express the Hamiltonian in terms of an n times n matrix A, then you diagonalize it, and then from this U that diagonalizes it, you just build the ground state, the correlation matrix for the ground state by taking the same expression and replacing the energies by their sign, plus one or minus one. That already gives you the ground state, okay? So let's do that. Let's implement this for a particular Hamiltonian. And what's the Hamiltonian? So let's try with this Hamiltonian. This is some Hamiltonian that in the spin language would be the XX model. I'm not going to insist on that. Just I'm saying that there is a, if you use the Jordan-Wigner transformation that you've learned in previous courses, then you can map this into a spin, simple spin Hamiltonian. But we'll just take it like this from the start. And then what do we want to do? We want to build A. Our goal now is to build A. A is this n times n matrix that contains all this information. And how does this work? Well, you can see that what have I done here? What we have in A first is the diagonal part. Okay, these coefficients minus 2 lambda. So I should write minus 2 lambda here on the diagonal. And then if we look at these guys, it's n with n plus 1 with a 1/2, and then n plus 1 with n. So this is just above the diagonal, so I just have to put here a 1/2, and a 1/2, and do that everywhere. So that is not looking very pretty. Let me do this. Okay, So we have just translated this Hamiltonian into this form A. So we just put all the coefficients into a matrix. And let's try to use MATLAB to then diagonalize this Hamiltonian and then also compute the correlation matrix for the ground state and see how it looks like. So for that purpose, are your computers ready? So let's see, let's create a folder that we could call PSI 2014 session 3. And I would like to ask you to please download the file All Energies that you can find in the wiki. All Energies. Okay.
So 1 second.
Well, that would simplify a class. So that was an email this morning? Probably it's in the spam filter.
33 MATLAB files, yes.
Sorry?
Yeah, I will send by email to the students.
So okay.
Okay.
So let's start. Anyway, let's start a new file, a script. And I'm going to call this free fermions particle number. And we'll start with a small number of sites, say eight fermionic modes. I'm going to set lambda
in here
to some any value. I'm just going to start with zero. Maybe that's not very pedagogical. Let's start with five.
So I have just sent an email just to check if you received.
So if you can try to put all energies.m into this folder. We're going to be using it soon. All right, so what we want to do then is we want to build A, and we'll start by initializing it, zeros, n, capital N. Okay, and let's see what we have so far. So if I run this, I get
the matrix. Now we want to fill the diagonal and, well, we want to convert the matrix into this one. Do I wait for a minute until you have downloaded that file?
Could you open that living window, editor window while you're waiting?
Sorry?
Could you open the editor window? I was
downloading
while you were here.
Yes, let's see. Editor, which one is it? This one. Okay.
So I just wrote n equal to 8, the number of sites, lambda equal to 5, and a equal to zeros, matrix of n times n matrix full of zeros.
All right, so let's then fill the diagonal first. We could run that and see what happens. So let's have a look at A.
Okay, minus 10 is 2 times. It's minus 2 times lambda. Good.
And then let's fill the rest.
So we're going to have I'm going to put twice as much, and then I'm going to symmetrize. So A is equal to A plus A prime divided by 2. OK, we can try this. How can I do this? I'll put this one here. Put this one. So what happened? Oh, yes, and A. So A is looking good. A is what we wanted. OK? Is everybody following? Excellent. So now what do we want to do? We want to diagonalize this Hamiltonian, or this matrix A. So we just write U, comma D equal to A. A. Remember that this function A is giving a decomposition of A as U times D times U dagger. And then one thing we could do is, well, we can run this and we can see if we look at the diagonal part of D, we find a spectrum. Okay. All right. So what we could, but I want you to remember that this is not the energy spectrum. So these are the single particle energies. What this means is to have the Hamiltonian, remember that the Hamiltonian is a 2 to the n times 2 to the n matrix, right? So we should have 2 to the n, 2 to the 8, 64, I think. I'm not sure. No, 128. How much is 2 to the 8? 252. 256. So we should have 256 energies here. I mean, in order to answer what the spectrum of the Hamiltonian, so let's build them, and this is done. I wrote a small small function for you that will do this. So first, let's make sure that we are not using this when n is very large, or we'll have too many results, too many eigenvalues, and the computer will react pretty badly. Then we can plot the eigenvalues that we just obtained, and then we can call this function that will take the single particle energies, and we'll look at all the possible combinations. OK, so what this is going to do for us is, in this part here, we are just taking the diagonal elements of the diagonal matrix capital D, which contains the eigenvalues of matrix A, the single particle energies. Then here, we're just opening a new figure so that the plot does not interfere with other plots. Here, we just plot them, these single particle energies. Then we compute all the energies, and we plot them in the same using the same figure. So let's try this. And that's what I get. Do you get the same? Similar? Okay. Let me now go and specialize to lambda equal to 0. I'm going to change lambda into 0 and run again. And I guess I should first. Okay, so there is no hold off here. I see. So I just added the hold off after plotting the energies. Okay. So let me also go from n equal to 8 to just n equal to 5 and run it again. Okay, here we have it. Oh, I see. Okay. So I think you can see all the code, or essentially all the code, in this string, and then the resulting here. So in red, what we have are the single particle energies. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them. We have n modes, 5 modes, so 5 single particle energies. And then the full spectrum is recovered. The 2 to the n energies are recovered by taking these single particle energies and deciding which ones are full and which ones are empty, which modes are full and which modes are empty. So all the blue dots that you see here are the result of taking the red ones. And for each of the reds, you decide whether that mode is empty or not. It's empty or full. And then if it's empty, you don't add energy. If it's full, you add that energy. Okay. So what I'm illustrating here is that indeed, we have been dealing with an n times n matrix, but we have information about 2 to the n times 2 to the n. Eigenvalues and eigenvectors. Excellent. So, you know, we can test this for, I don't know, 15 sites. And then you can see that 2 to the 15 is a lot. And you have all the energies there. And so on. All right, so now we have diagonalize the Hamiltonian. Let's look into building the ground state, the correlation matrix for the ground state. And how are we going to do that? Well, the recipe is very clear. It's written here. Well, we're just going to replace in the decomposition for A, we'll replace each energy with its sign. So let's do that. Let's call SD equal to sine of D. Let's see what this does. Oh, what the number of particles that's there is? It's 5. And see, we have replaced the energy. So if we look at D, we had these diagonal entries. And if we type sine of D, we get just the sine. OK? So we can use that in our code. We're going to define SD equal to sine of D. Then the correlation matrix is as simple as, for the ground state, is as simple as multiplying U times SD times U dagger. We just computed the ground state here. Okay, so we can open a new figure. Oh, well, let's. What happened here? That's not looking good. Okay. Let's run this first. So we just computed the correlation matrix. And what we can do is we can compare the Hamiltonian as given by A, which was this almost diagonal matrix, with the correlation matrix M. Okay? And what we see is that the Hamiltonian was only coupling nearest neighbor sites. Right? But the correlations, so this is the correlation matrix. This is telling you how one mode is correlated. So mode 3 is correlated with mode 4. Right? You see that mode 1 is non-trivially correlated with mode 5. Okay, so all the modes are correlated. So the ground, the Hamiltonian was just near its neighbor, but the ground state has correlations everywhere. Okay, and that's just the effect of replacing the energies in the diagonal with their sign. We have established correlations between all the modes.
We're considering this chain in a circle?
No, the Hamiltonian we wrote is with periodic, without its open boundary conditions. If you want to change that, you have to include elements here. And you could do that easily. Okay, so let's do the following then. Let's look at these correlations that we have. Just so we have the correlation matrix for the ground state. Let's have a look what type of correlation we have, and for that. Let's open a new figure, figure 2. And then let's plot the correlations between the first mode and any other mode. So that's contained in matrix M. And we are just saying, take, for instance, this. Right? This is the first column of the correlation matrix. So what we're doing is the correlation between the first mode and the rest of modes. And so let's see if this works well. All right, we obtain that there are not that many correlations because there are not that many modes. Let's choose some fancy format here. I don't know, star. Green. Try again. OK. So what this plot is showing, that's not very clear, right? So blue, maybe blue is better. What we see is some pattern of correlation. Let's increase. Now let's use the fact that these are free fermions. Let's increase n to, 5,000. Let's see. OK. What did I write here? Let's say 100. Maybe it will be more clear. OK, 100 is nice. So now we have a system of 100 modes. OK, forget about the exact diagonalization. We will never get there. And what we see is that the first mode in the ground state is correlated with modes at distance 10, 20, 30, OK, all the way to the last one, according to this. OK. We see that this correlation matrix, we see the structure. We can start seeing the structure of the ground state. All right. So to learn more about this ground state, what we can do is we can plot the same in log-log scale. So let's try that. We'll start a new figure, figure 3. And log-log is a command similar to plot, just that it's going to plot the data in log-log scale. Okay? Motivation for that is that if you look at this figure, this decay of correlations looks maybe power law. Maybe there is a power decay of correlation. So let's try to see whether that's true. So let's plot the same m between the first column of M, and see there are negative and positive values. If you try to plot the logarithm of a negative value, we're going to get into trouble. So let's take the absolute value of this, and then star blue. OK, so we're going to plot the same thing, but in log-log scale. And we took the absolute value first. What do we see here? So we see the following. All these 10 to the minus 15 values, ignore them. They are zeros. They are numerical zeros. I mean, you don't have to ignore them. Just know that they are there, but they are zeros. And then we have a decay of correlations in log-log scale, which pretty much look like a straight line all the way to the end of the system, there might be some boundary effects there. So it's not a exactly straight line. But it's almost a straight line, and this is telling us that the correlations in the ground state obey a power law. So to check this more specifically, what we could do is, well, we could try to guess what power law it is. So I'm going to build some vector which runs from 1 to n. I'm going to plot on top of what we already have, and then I'm going to write x and x point to the minus 1. I'll tell you in a second what I'm doing here. Okay, so what I'm doing is I'm plotting, I'm faking data now. I'm saying, imagine that the data obeys a power law as given by 1 over x. And I'm going to plot that on the same plot that we just had with the correlations. So let me run this. And if I zoom in again, how do I zoom in it? I go up here, there is a magnifying glass with a plus, and then I make a square with the region I want to look at. What we find is, in blue, we have the correlators as given by the correlation matrix. As we go, so these are the correlations between the first side and any other side. And in red is just this 1 over x or 1 over n plotted next to it to show that actually it's a power law and the power is 1 or minus 1. Okay? So we have just seen that for some reason the choice of Hamiltonian that we have is critical, and the ground state obeys or displays power law correlations. All right? Excellent. Any questions so far?
So you said that we can map this Hamiltonian into a spin chain by a Jordan-Baker transformation. So in the case of the spin chain, the correlations are exponentially decaying, right?
They won't be exponentially decaying. They will be also power law.
Why?
There are, at least there will be some type of correlations that are local both for spin variables and in fermionic variables. So for instance, sigma z correlation corresponds to n times n in fermionic. So particle number correlation. These ones don't have a string of sigma z in between. So they are local. This type of correlators will display the same behavior in both cases. I'm saying that the fermionic, in fermionic variables, you see power law. And this will end up being power law also in spin variables. Does this bother you?
Yes, a little. Because if I'm not mistaken, if I have a Hamiltonian that has a gap, right?
This Hamiltonian happens to have no gap.
It's gapless?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, then.
I was going to illustrate this with the next example. But you can check. You can look at the spectrum that you got. Even the single particle spectrum, the one that you only have n eigenvalues. And then you can change n, you can increase n, and you'll see that this single particle spectrum is closing. The gap is closing there. You can play around with that.
Okay.
Now you have the tools. Okay, so, all right, so we're done with the first example. Any other question? Then let's look at the second example in the last 15 minutes. So for this second example, we're going to use Majorana modes. And again, this is the first tutorial. The first tutorial you had to deal with Majorana modes. I'll remind you what this was about. So in this case, suppose we have a fermionic Hamiltonian, which is quadratic in the harmonic operators, and that does not commute with the particle number, with the total particle number, but only with the parity of it. Okay, so this is just saying that this Hamiltonian preserves the parity of the fermionic number, but not the fermionic number itself. So in this case, generically, you can write it in this way. That's the most general expression for a quadratic Hamiltonian. And I insist that this is in the notes of the first tutorial. All right? Okay. So in this case, it is instead of using fermionic operators, it's more convenient to introduce a new set of operators. And you have them here. These are the Majorana operators. Okay. Majorana modes. So for each side I, right, we have n sides. For each side I, we introduce two Majorana operators. The first one is AI plus AI daga. And the second one on the same side I is AI minus AI daga divided by whatever. Okay? So we go from n fermionic operators to 2n Majorana operators. And why are we doing this? Well, first, let me say that these Majorana operators are such that and they are Hermitian conjugate as opposed to the fermionic operators. So they still obey anti-commutation relations, okay? But they are not the same as the fermionic operators. You can think of this as the real part of the fermionic operator and this as the imaginary part of the fermionic operator, if you want. All right. Why are we doing this? Well, it turns out that in that case, if we express the same Hamiltonian in terms of these Majorana operators, then we get a quadratic form of like this, okay? Where now all the coefficients are in this matrix Cij, and these coefficients, this matrix of coefficients, these coefficients are real, and the matrix is anti-symmetric. So if you take the transpose, you get C with a minus sign. Okay? So that's very much parallel to what we had up there, but we're just using more convenient variables for this problem. And this was for the Hamiltonian. The Hamiltonian is completely characterized by this matrix, which is now 2n times 2n. And similarly, if we take a Gaussian state, which preserves parity, but not particle number. Well, in a generic state, Gaussian state that preserves parity, then we can write it. We can express its correlation matrix, which contains all the information, in terms of the expectation value of a commutator of these Majorana modes. And I hope you're seeing here the parallelism. So all the information, this correlation matrix is real, and it's anti-symmetric. Okay. So Hamiltonian now is given by a 2 times 2, 2n times 2n real anti-symmetric matrix. And the ground state, for instance, or the correlation matrix for the ground state is, again, a 2 times 2, 2n times 2n real anti-symmetric matrix. All right? So to go from the case where we have particle conservation to the case where we only have parity conservation, we have to change a little bit, but it's very analogous. We replace, remember these matrices were n times n, these are 2n times 2n, and there are a small number of other constraints. So in particular, and this is also, I think, contained in the tutorial, the notes of the tutorial, you saw that a way to find the correlation matrix for the ground state is, remember this is related to H, right? So if H is encoded in this matrix C, then you can block diagonalize this matrix C by means of orthogonal operations. So O now belongs to O to N. Orthogonal group, 2n times 2n. Okay, so if O diagonalizes or block diagonalizes C, then you can get the correlation matrix for the ground state by again just replacing the energies that you obtain by their sign. This time we have that all the energies can be chosen to be positive. Okay. So you saw that on Monday. I'm just reminding you of it. And now what we want to do is to actually use this formalism to solve again the Ising model. Okay, but this time we won't be dealing with n equal to 20 spins, but maybe 500 or 1,000. So you have seen the Jordan-Migner transformation in a previous course. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to state that if you have a term like this, minus j sigma x n sigma x n plus 1 minus h sigma z n, after a Jordan-Migner transformation and then change of variables into Majorana modes, this reads the following way. Okay, this is just the Jordan-Migner transformation. Between spin variables and fermionic variables, and then, of course, from fermionic operators to Majorana modes. But you can do that. And so what this means is that you recognize here a term in the Ising model, and so we can rewrite the Ising model as this. First term, and then second term, okay, and then this implies that we can write metric C. And you can check later. Let's speed up a little bit so we get to see this. So this corresponds to this matrix. So we just have some block in the middle, which is repeated everywhere in the diagonal. And then we have another block here, which is also repeated. And minus the same block, which is also repeated. Okay, I'm just translating the Ising model into Majorana operators and then writing the Hamiltonian in terms, or a C corresponding to this Hamiltonian, matrix C corresponding to this Hamiltonian. Okay, so with that, we can go back for a couple of minutes to, what is this? Okay. We can try to see how we would manipulate Majorana fermions. So we can type in a new file, fermions, free fermions, parity. What do we do? Can we have the computer back, please? Well, worst case scenario, you'll find the code in the wiki. That's not exactly what I wanted. Okay, looks like we won't see a lot about this, but it's okay. So what you can do in this case is, so you just write the metric C, you diagonalize it. Now you would think, oh, how do I use orthogonal operators or transformation instead of unitaries? Well, it doesn't really matter. You can just use unitaries. It will all go through. So, and then I had these nice plots. So this is the ISI model, and what you can do, so you'll find this file on the wiki. What you can do in this case is you change, by changing the relative weight, say J is equal to 1, and then you change the magnetic field, you can be at criticality, at the critical point when H is equal to 1, or off critical point, and you will see the correlations that follow a power law or become exponentially suppressed. Okay, so maybe it was a good thing that we don't have the computer. All right, so with this, we get to the end of the week. And so what we've done this week is we've learned basic tools, exact diagonalization, and also the free fermion formalism. And next week, what we're going to do with that is we're going to use these tools to explore many-body entanglement. Okay, so we're going to consider local Hamiltonians in mostly in one dimension, then also in two dimensions using free fermions. We'll define what entanglement is about, and we'll use these tools to compute it and then to draw some conclusions. And the conclusions are known, or the main conclusion will be that entanglement follows a very particular pattern that is known as the boundary law. Okay, and that will be the key to the third week, where we will exploit this boundary law to define tensor networks and to see how we can actually efficiently simulate also interacting systems. Okay, so there will be. Is the homework ready? Okay. So if you can do the homework by Wednesday next week, it will be very convenient because we're going to be using that algorithm. Okay. Excellent. Any questions?
Remember you the first day you told us that you were cheating here by using fermions?
Yes.
Why?
Well, we are not analyzing many-body systems. We're analyzing a very particular subclass of many-body systems, namely fermions that do not interact.
Sure.
In condensed matter, there is this tradition that if something you can solve, then it's not interesting. Okay. So we've known free fermions for so long, and that a fermion liquid looks like it's a piece of cake. It's actually not true. There is a lot to be said and to be learned from a fermion liquid, but it's cheating still in the sense that we are not dealing with a generic Hamiltonian. These tools are not going to allow you to explore your favorite system, only free fermions.
Okay, please take the book for more.